It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The global tattoo market, the research report was published over the summer. It looks at market size, industry trends, demographics, and analysts predict strong growth for the foreseeable future, in part driven by technology innovation and an evolving tattoo culture that is more diverse and inclusive. Join in on body art, healing from trauma, eliminating stereotypes about tattoos, 800-642-1234. Caitlin Romanesco is here and is a tattooist and medical aesthetician at Plastic Surgery and Skin Specialist by Baycare Clinic in Green Bay. Caitlin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Alexandra Winthrop as well, tattoo artist at Evergreen Studios in Chicago. Work includes scar cover-up tattooing. Alexandra, welcome to you from the Windy City.
Thank you. Good morning. It's great being here.
Well, Alexandra, let's start with you. You do tattoos to cover up scars. What range of experiences do people have before coming to you?
I work primarily, it's a good mix of folks coming in with self-harm scars and surgery scars. So a lot of folks either looking to heal from really dark times or just, you know, get over a traumatic portion of their lives, just looking for a non-judgmental person to help them through that journey.
I would imagine, too, that people of all ages from all walks of life are, coming to you. How do you develop rapport with a stranger as they sit down with you and open up about a deeply personal experience about a scar, or also sharing a personal experience of getting a tattoo?
Oh, my. It's definitely tricky with that. It helps. I've been doing this for almost 10 years now. Building up that rapport is kind of coming second nature now. It also helps that I myself am someone who have sought out a scar cover up in the past. So being able to have that empathy for folks coming in and knowing the stigma that folks feel in having to hide those scars and looking for that place of healing, is helpful in that experience.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, let's turn to you because you work out of a clinic setting, a medical clinic in Green Bay. How does your work differ from decorative tattooing?
So it honestly doesn't really differ too much as far as clinical versus tattoo shop specifically. Mm-hmm. We're still tattooing. The only difference would be that I work kind of hand in hand with our surgeons here, especially with the type of tattooing that I do with mastectomy or breast cancer survivors. They go hand in hand. So I am able to kind of consult and have these discussions with these patients before we even go in and kind of figure out the tattoo part.
How successful are you in able to use that form of tattooing after a mastectomy?
Yeah, so very successful. Every patient has a different journey, right? Their healing journey has started, maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago, sometimes even longer than that. I like to kind of consider myself that finishing piece, if you will, or like kind of that last topper to the cake, if you will, kind of give them that sense of being whole again. Some of them feel like they've lost part of who they are as a woman, and I'm able to kind of come in and give them a little bit of that back.
We're talking about tattooing that addresses issues of trauma and body image. Caitlin Romanesco there, medical aesthetician and tattooist in Green Bay. Alexandra Winthrop with us, Chicago tattoo artist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Alexandra, deeply personal, I'm sure, but can you talk a little bit about your perspective of scar cover-up and what you have gone through?
Well, they're very much with any kind of scars. There is that stigmatization of, I mean, obviously it's been folks who are looking for a cover-up for that have those scars because, especially self-harm-wise, because they have been through a dark time. And as with many things, visually-wise, anything that's perceived as different is going to get a lot of judgment. So for myself or for the clients with whom I work with, there is that sense of looking to regain that confidence, feeling at home in one's own body again. Definitely that biggest portion of the healing journey. And to an extent, there is a lot less stigmatization with extensive or beautiful tattooing than there is with visual scars. The folks getting those scar cover-ups, they're always going to know that those scars are there. But being able to, visually replace them with something beautiful, something that's of one's own choice, is so important because whether it's self-harm scars or surgical scars, receiving those scars isn't necessarily one's choice. So being able to take that power back and be able to make that choice that I'm going to make this into something beautiful, it's, so important with any scar cover-up.
Thank you for sharing that. Let's go to Karen in Green Bay. Karen, what's your story?
My story is I had breast cancer, and I lost, of course, my hair and my eyelashes and my eyebrows. And, I'd look in the mirror after I had cancer, and I'd think, who is that? I was like a ghost. So anyway, I decided, since my eyebrows never came back, I decided to treat myself to microblading. And it was a miracle. I had that done. It just helped me so much. As far as my self-esteem, I just felt more beautiful. I'd get up in the morning and I'd look in the mirror and like, oh my gosh, I'm back again. But anyway, so it was just such a gift to me, to be able to have that done. And that's all I wanted to say.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much. Caitlin, what do you make of that? A gift to see yourself whole again, or how you would like to see yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. It's truly a gift. It's such a privilege and it's super rewarding, especially in the field, that Alexandria and I are in, to kind of give that back to someone, especially when they've gone through so much, whether it be, self-harm, cancer, surgery, whatever their journey is. It's so awesome to give that to them where they're looking at themselves in the mirror and they feel beautiful and they feel whole. There's really no other feeling that's really more rewarding than that.
And can you explain a little bit, because you are trained in 3D tattooing and this form of medical tattooing, can you explain a little bit there? Yes.
So really the main difference with that is, with Alexandra, she's, doing more of the big pieces, which, I looked at some of her work earlier, and by the way, it's amazing. I specialize more in actually just creating what looks like a normal areola with a nipple. Mm-hmm. And that can be either we're starting from scratch, we're creating two new ones for a patient, or sometimes they already have one and we're going to have to create the other one to kind of match that one. And sometimes too, they have lightening of the areola and we have to go in and kind of touch that up or, make it darker. It's all kind of case by case, if you will. But more of it is just on the realism aspect for people that aren't necessarily ready to kind of go and create like a big, bold piece. They don't really, that's not what they're going for. That's kind of where I come in.
We're exploring the power of tattoos with Caitlin Romanesco, medical esthetician, tattooist in Green Bay, and Chicago-based tattoo artist Alexandra Winthrop on Scar Cover-Up. Join in on expressing through tattoos how you've seen the cultural significance. Maybe you've had a scar cover-up. 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tattoos, piercings, they've skyrocketed in popularity over the last few decades. And according to a recent piece in SciPost reporting on psychology and neuroscience, trauma survivors may turn to body modification like tattoos as a way to overcome past experiences. Join in on tattooing as a healing art on Scar Cover-Up, 800-642-1234. Tattoo artists Alexandra Winthrop and Caitlin Romanesco, stay with us. We heard from Sheila in Madison, called in and couldn't stay with us. And Sheila wants to know, Alexandra, when tattooing over scars, does the body absorb or spread the ink differently?
It depends on the type of scar tissue. So the main types of scar tissue out there, there's the more shallow scars. There's thicker, deeper scars. You can have hypertrophic scarring or keloid scarring. All of them act very differently in regards to how you tattoo them, how it heals. Most often with any sort of thicker scars, you may need a second pass over the scar tissue to ensure that everything is just as saturated as it is on the rest of the skin. High detail may not be possible with some thicker scars. So depending on the type of scar, I may elect to, do more of a texture-based design to conceal them versus like something super, super detailed. Or, yeah, there's definitely many ways of doing that. I always do a very in-depth consultation with folks before we get into the design to get an idea of the type of scarring that they have and what exactly design-wise would work best for their particular scar situation.
That makes sense. Caitlin, Sheila also was wondering that red ink on tattoos, that it used to be problematic with MRIs, and is wondering, is that still the case?
I have personally not experienced that. I think pigments have come a long way since then. The pigments that I use are specifically created for tattooing areolas. You know, it is actually an areola pigment set. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say we even use a red. I use more of pinks and neutrals versus a solid red color.
Okay. Thank you, Sheila, for those questions. Let's bring in Susan now in Madison. Susan, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I just have basically a comment. Actually, it's an aha moment, because I'm a cancer survivor, and I, in 2017, had breast replacements with the tattooing done. And I just realized that I do have tattoos, and I don't even think of them as tattoos. I think it was just part of the treatment, part of the process, and I just realized that, yeah, I have tattoos.
Susan, thank you. So, Caitlin, I would imagine you would see that as a success story.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's awesome. That means that, you know, whoever did those areolas, I mean, they did a great job, and she's obviously very happy with them. So I'd say that was a job well done. Sorry.
How long after surgery must you wait to begin your process?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I rule of thumb, 6 months at least from last surgery. There are certain circumstances where I have done it slightly sooner, only off of their doctor's request. But typically I will not touch their skin until 6 months last surgery.
Talking with Caitlin Romanesco, medical esthetician and tattooist in Green Bay. Alexandra Winthrop is here, tattoo artist in Chicago, on scar cover-up. And your experience is 800-642-1234. I want to turn to licensing, Alexandra. What is involved in the licensing of a tattoo artist where you are?
That's a great question. It definitely varies by state and location. In Chicago, the tattoo studio is the one that necessarily requires a license. Individual artists have to renew their yearly bloodborne pathogens training, but individuals themselves do not require a tattoo license.
Okay. And Caitlin, I understand you received training at an Institute of Tattooing in Pennsylvania. What was your licensing like for you and that training?
Yeah, so the licensing here in Wisconsin is actually very similar to what it is in Chicago. For tattooing specifically, a lot of that has to do with the clinic and getting those done and then renewing your bloodborne pathogens yearly as well. As far as my training, yes, I went to Soller Institute, which is in Pennsylvania. It's affiliated with Penn State, and they work out of there doing all the areola reconstruction for them. It was about a week long, full days, 10-hour days, just basically nonstop tattooing. We did have, models come in or, breast cancer patients from some of the hospitals out in Pennsylvania that we were able to kind of work on, which was super rewarding and just overall an amazing experience. If anyone's looking to kind of ever get into it, I would definitely recommend going out there, making the trip. It's definitely worth it.
Let's bring in Joy now in West Bend. Joy, hi. You're a nurse?
Yes. I'm a retired nurse, but I worked in inpatient psychiatry at one time. And I think about a woman who came in, she would be self-harming and, asked to come in. And I just think about her a lot because when I would try to talk with her about her, the emotional, physical, and sexual abuse she suffered as a child, the rest of our staff would say, well, we just want you to give medications and, talk lightly with these people. We don't want you to open this can of worms. In order to have a tattoo to cover up something like that or to help deal with that, I would think that a person has to go through a lot of therapy or a lot of work to get to a point where you're ready for a tattoo. And I'm wondering how these tattoo artists have been involved with that work that people have done. Is it done before they come, during?
Joy, yeah, such an important question. Alexandra, you first.
Absolutely. It's such an endeavor if you're looking to get a scar cover-up, going to an absolute stranger with this amount of trauma that you've suffered and having to open up about some of that too, or at least be vulnerable enough to say, hey, I'm looking to get a scar cover up. Again, as someone who has gone through that myself, I understand there, some folks are going to want to delve into that a little bit during the tattoo. Some folks are not going to. And it's so important to be able to, be there for them no matter which way they're feeling. And number one, offer up that opportunity to get the scar cover up, but just be that person who, understands that you've been through something, you're looking to regain something, and I am here for that. I'm here to help you for that.
Alexandra and Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your work.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Alexandra Winthrop is a tattoo artist at Evergreen Studios in Chicago. Caitlin Romanesco is a medical esthetician and tattooist at Plastic Surgery and Skin Specialists by Bay Care Clinic in Green Bay. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So where do you encounter the worst potholes? How do you dodge them? Call in about new ones, neglected ones. Your questions about filling potholes, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Teal Spellman is Director of Public Works for the Village of Bellevue, southeast of Green Bay. Teal, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. And Steve Grenier is here, Director of Public Works for the City of Green Bay. Steve, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And Steve, let's start with you. Green Bay Public Works Department, you manage about 440 miles of roads. How are pothole conditions in the region compared to previous years?
This year seems to be a bumper crop for potholes. We've had the perfect conditions for development of potholes over the last month or so, with the temperatures being both above and below the freezing point, and a huge amount of precipitation that we've received here over the last 4 weeks. So the time and the conditions are absolutely perfect for development of potholes.
So that yo-yoing of temperatures along with a lot of rain, snow, sleet, whatever, that can really worsen the roads.
Precisely. That's exactly how potholes form.
Teal, the Village of Bellevue manages about 80 miles of roads. You're near Green Bay, a few miles away. Are potholes a major concern there?
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate what Steve had said about kind of the perfect conditions for a spring season filled with potholes. We have the yo-yoing, as you said, between freezing and thawing, paired with excessive water movement. It's a perfect recipe for some potholes here. So we're seeing the same situation that they are in Green Bay.
So Steve, set out the process for you and the crew as they fill potholes. You know, what does that force look like for Green Bay? How do you go about doing it and filling these potholes?
Well, we receive reports on potholes from a variety of different sources. Obviously, we've got folks who call or email, get in contact with us personally. We also have a form or an ability on our city's main webpage called a request for service, where a person can go in and there's a variety of different requests that can be filled out, pothole being one of them. They fill in a form, give us a location, we know about it, or our route drivers, city employees in the normal course of doing their tasks during the day happen to notice one, they can also report that. Then what we've got is a crew that goes out, and we've got it. It looks like a large kind of a trailer mounted hot box, and we've got asphalt, hot mix asphalt in there that we can heat back up to about 335 degrees. So it's pliable, like when you're paving in the summer. They'll clean out that hole, make sure that it's dry. They put a bonding agent down in there, and then they put the asphalt material in the hole, run a compactor over it to compact it down, and then move on to the next one. Probably the biggest challenges we see at this time of the year is making sure that you get the hole as clean and as dry as you can so that the material you're putting in the hole stays in the hole and doesn't just squish out and go flying across the road, as folks may have been more accustomed to seeing in the past.
Can you fill the jobs on your crew? Do you have enough people doing this work?
That has been a challenge. I think we in public service have faced the same challenges with employment that the private sector has. I don't think it's any great secret out there that public sector jobs traditionally and now have been at a lower pay scale than what we're seeing on the private side. We're kind of limited by budget and council action as to what we can offer for compensation. So we have been losing a lot of staff, both to other municipalities as well as going to the private side.
Teal, how about you? Does your village pothole filling efforts, you know, echo what Green Bay looks like, or is it a bit different?
You know, we are a smaller municipality than the city of Green Bay, so our budgets are definitely different than the city of Green Bay. In this time of the year, we focus more on what's called like winter mix patching. So it is a cold patch. It's not heated the same way. So we have two staff typically that go out and they do pothole filling with that winter mix. So it's a cold mix. That's more of a temporary patch until if it's needed in the summer, we can go out and we can actually cut out a larger area and we can hot mix patch it. But same sort of thing, you know, we make sure that the pothole is dry, we fill the material in there, we compact it, and go that way. We also do patrolling. So we have roads, we have a primaries and secondaries in Bellevue. And we also have roads that we know are near the end of their lives. So in the springtime, we make it an effort to kind of do more patrolling on those roads to kind of do preemptive pothole filling before complaints roll in. We do also have a citizen request form on our website that people can utilize. And we do appreciate, because we can't be on every mile of every road every day. So we do appreciate that. And we do listen and check those out when we get them.
What about those connector roads? How do you work with the city of Green Bay to maintain roads from the village that connect into Green Bay?
We have a good working relationship with our municipal partners in the area. My road supervisor works well with the Green Bay's road supervisor. We do have some sort of maintenance agreements for things like road striping and other things, again, because we're a smaller municipality. We can't own everything that we need to do the job. So we work well with the city of Green Bay, Alloway, even Brown County. We work together and get what we all need to get done, you know, because we're in this together.
Everyone's in the same boat. Potholes, they don't play favorites. Talking with Teal Spellman, who leads Public Works for the Village of Bellevue. Steve Grenier is here, Director of Public Works for the City of Green Bay, as we understand the life and times of potholes with your questions along the way, 800-642-1234. Jane in Suamico is here. Jane, hi.
Hi, I have a question about who owns the roads and is responsible for repairing them. I've learned that some roads belong to the state, so that municipalities don't repair them. The state has to supply the money and staff to repair them. Can you speak to that, please?
Jane, thank you. Steve, go ahead.
The answer is it depends. Okay, so there are roads that are under state jurisdiction, there are roads under county jurisdiction, then there are roads that are under local jurisdiction. And depending on your municipality, those could change. Green Bay being a class two city, where a state trunk highway enters our corporate boundary, it becomes known as a connecting highway. And Green Bay receives money from the state to maintain our connecting highways. So a major reconstruct project would be state or federally funded. But routine maintenance like pothole patching or crack sealing on, say, a West Mason Street. West Mason, as it enters Green Bay, is State Trunk Highway 54. The routine maintenance on that highway becomes our responsibility. Now, county roads are typically maintained by the county. Green Bay, again, is a little different. We've got an agreement that goes back to 1979 that spells out exactly what roads and what segments of roads are our responsibility versus the county's. Typically, the state doesn't have a maintenance crew, so that maintenance responsibility, like pothole patching and things of that nature, would fall to the county being an agent of the state. As Teal had indicated previously, most of the municipalities here in the county have cooperative agreements with each other, and we've got maintenance agreements that literally go back decades. So those we rely on those maintenance agreements to identify what segments of what streets who should be doing the maintenance work on them. And then as Teal indicated, we've all got great working relationships with each other. We actually have a Brown County Public Works Association that all the directors belong to. We meet on a pretty regular basis to talk about things like this or items of mutual interest. And we utilize that relationship that if there's something that's in my maintenance responsibility and my crews are directed someplace else, but it's a border street with Bellevue, I have absolutely no problem picking the phone up, calling Teal and saying, Teal, it's going to take me 3 days to get there. And she may turn around and say, Steve, I've got a crew that's available. We can be there today. And we just kind of trade that off and work with each other.
Teal, can you explain how the village funds road maintenance? What does that look like for a much smaller, community?
So for road maintenance, street and highway maintenance here, our annual budget is about $420,000 or for 2023. And that includes salaries and things like pothole filling, crack filling, mastic, striping, things like that. So that is a general item. So it's on the tax levy for that item. For road construction projects, we do something which called special assessment. So that's a little bit different process. And if you had a week to talk about that, we could go really in depth. But as far as the maintenance goes, that is something that is handled on the general tax levy.
Steve, what about the wheel tax for Green Bay? Residents paying $20. Is that enough to fund needed road repairs?
The wheel tax, as it's commonly called, is actually a local vehicle registration fee. So you pay a registration fee every year to the state of Wisconsin to renew your license plate on your vehicle. There's a $20 charge added to that here within the corporate city limits of Green Bay for any vehicle that is less than 8,000 pounds of gross vehicle weight. So large trucks, delivery trucks, semis, those kind of things are not paying that $20 fee. It's mostly on passenger vehicles. So that $20 comes back to the city. The state takes a small administrative charge off of that for processing, and then they send the bulk of that money to the city. That goes into a completely segregated account. It's not mixed with any other money within the city. And part of that money is utilized for road maintenance and repair, excluding salaries, benefits, equipment charges, things of that nature. If we just look at the material itself, so the mastics for crack sealing and the asphalt for road repair and potholes, we spend about between $250,000 and $300,000 just purchasing materials. So overall program cost is probably up in the $600,000, $600,000 to $700,000 range for maintenance.
And that doesn't even begin to look at the wear and tear on the vehicles that are out there, as well as the crews and paying the crews. So it definitely adds up.
Yeah, it does. And again, getting back to the funding mechanism, up until about 3 years ago, we were very, very similar to Bellevue in how we handled our maintenance activities. It was a levy-supported budget line item within our budget. But, you know, like many municipalities around the state, we're finding ourselves with fiscal constraint and budget crunches. So we had to look at a way to defer or move some of those costs off the levy. And the city did enact that local vehicle registration fee that started, I think the enactment came at the end of 2018 with the first season of collection in 2019. The nice thing about that is, again, it's not on your tax bill. It's only $20. It's pretty easy to budget that in when you're renewing your license plates. And it provides a dependable and segregated funding stream. So nobody can come in and take that money and use it for something else. It has to be spent, according to state statute, on transportation related purposes.
Steve Grenier, Public Works Director for Green Bay. Teal Spellman here holds the same position for the Village of Bellevue in the Green Bay metro area. Be part of our conversation, calling with your questions, your thoughts on potholes and street maintenance in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have hit pothole season. Governor Tony Evers went on that pothole patrol tour last summer, campaigned on fixing the roads. Call in with your questions, your thoughts on road maintenance in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Steve Grenier is Green Bay's Director of Public Works, and Teal Spellman is here, Director of Public Works for the Village of Bellevue. Let's bring in Randy in Ripon. Randy, what would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I've worked in construction all my life. I'm 66. And having worked with concrete, I find frustrating is trying to put asphalt patch in a concrete pothole. You're trying to mix oil and water together, and it doesn't work. If it were me patching it, and I'd volunteer my time to do it, is I would spray in after you clean it, blow it out with air, spray a concrete bonding solution in there, and then put high-strength, fast-setting concrete in there. And I think I could guarantee that would stay there. I mean, I understand the freeze-thaw cycles and water getting in there. I mean, I get all that. And the same thing with the asphalt. I see our city putting stuff in there, snowplow comes, pops it out, and the cycle starts over again.
Randy, thank you for that perspective as being one of those people who have worked in this. Teal, what do you make of that?
So, you know, with concrete, it is definitely a different animal. And I would say that patching it or with blacktop or asphalt is definitely a temporary fix. We're all constrained to budgets and timelines, and there's certain things you can do in certain times of the year. So typically with concrete, you eventually have to do what's called a concrete pavement rehab. And that's where you get in there, you saw cut out areas, and you do exactly what this gentleman had mentioned, where you actually fill it back with concrete, which is a more permanent fix. So in between that time, though, we don't want massive gaping holes in our concrete pavement. So we have to have a temporary solution, which ultimately is an asphalt patch of some sort.
You worked for the Minnesota County Public Works Department and the Minnesota DOT. What could our state learn from Minnesota in maintaining roads?
You know, I think that everybody has kind of their own things that they're good at. I will say Minnesota has done a really, really good job on concrete pavement, exactly what this gentleman was speaking about. You know, it's definitely different funding sources, different ways municipalities get money. It is a whole different animal. So I think that both states do things well. You know, concrete pavement, like I said, Minnesota's done a really good job. That's something that I can highlight that is sort of unique to them. So we do meet with other states, you know, regional and things like that. Midwestern states can learn lots of things from each other. So that's what, you know, networking, getting out there, going to conferences, doing things like this, I think is very important for our sector.
Ellen from Milwaukee called and said that there are so many potholes in Milwaukee, said that the potholes cause damage to cars and sometimes accidents. Steve, who do people call to get a pothole repaired? Is it a city council member? Is it the county supervisor? And what if it still goes on neglected?
Well, I would suggest that you get in contact with the jurisdiction, the local jurisdiction first. So if you're in the city of Green Bay, contact the city of Green Bay. If you're in the village of Bellevue, contact the village of Bellevue. If you know that you're on a county trunk highway, contact Brown County. So part of it is an awareness of knowing where you're at and what road you're on. Again, as Teal indicated, most of our municipalities have an online presence. So if you're out and about and you happen to notice or hit a pothole and you pull off into a parking lot, most of the time you can go right on your smartphone, go to that municipality's website, get that form, fill it out online in real time and hit submit. And we know about it. I don't know Bellevue's system. I only know my own, but with Green Bay's request for service, when you submit that request, it gives you an incident number, and you can always go back and check the status of it. If you're not getting what you feel to be a timely response, then by all means, reach back out, ask for a status update, check the status on your request for service, contact our Public Works Department main line, and ask to speak with somebody. We'll be more than happy to fill you in.
Teal, is like an incident ticket system pretty common among communities?
Yeah, I think it's just another way that we can reach different demographics, right? Not everybody's going to want to call us. Not everybody's going to want to email us. So I think that having this option is helpful in gaining that information. Again, it is valuable to us. We can't be on every mile of every road every day. So we find the citizens' request form to be very valuable to us in every season, you know, snow plowing, summer, it doesn't matter. It's very valuable to us, and we find it a very useful tool.
Teal Spellman, Village of Bellevue, Steve Grenier from the City of Green Bay, as we discuss pothole repair season. Let's go to Mike in Richland Center. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hey, the point I wanted to bring out, it's a patented technique called mechanical concrete, and it uses tires, waste tires. You cut the sidewalls out, and you use it as a very large geotextile. But I don't see it being implemented much, and its specialty is dealing with potholes. What can you tell me on that?
Steve, go ahead.
Well, there are a number of these technologies that have popped up over the last 30 years or so where we're utilizing what was previously a waste material and incorporating it back into a building material. So utilization of crumb rubber or waste tires into a concrete mix is something that's out there. There are similar materials that are used to supplement asphalt. So again, not too odd to hear of something like that. One of the things that Teal had talked about earlier was when we're doing a repair, not only getting the repair area dry, but also a utilization of a bonding agent. The biggest problem with these type of temporary repairs, and bear in mind, when you see a crew out, especially at this time of year, doing a pothole repair, that is intended to be temporary. There's usually an intent to come back and do something more substantial, more permanent at a later time. What we're trying to do is stop the water infiltration from causing that pothole to get worse than it already is. So this is very much a temporary solution. The big problem we have is getting whatever material you're putting into the hole to properly bond to the existing pavement, because that interface where those two materials come together, that's where it separates and that's where the pothole reforms.
Well, thanks for these insights and thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Steve Grenier, Director of Public Works for Green Bay. Teal Spellman leads Public Works for the Village of Bellevue in the Green Bay vicinity. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.